27 minutes to 8. Welcome back to Sabah al-Muslim on Radio Islam International. As many of the listeners would know, I was in Australia for the last 2 weeks or so. Just got back about 2 days ago. And many of the listeners have been asking, Mona, when are you going to tell us about the trip? Yesterday I was still a bit jet-lagged, to be honest. It takes a while before the body clock readjusts, and everybody has their own theory as to how to overcome jet lag. And jet lag is not only about the traveling or the distance you travel. It has a lot to do also with the different time zones. Now, today I thought that I'll just speak a little bit about Australia as a country, just so that those who haven't visited Australia get a bit of a better picture. And then, inshallah, on Monday, I'll talk a little bit more about the various places that we visited, the various ulama that we met, the various organizations that we saw, and the programs and that kind of thing. Australia, firstly, we need to understand, is one of the biggest countries in the world in terms of size, in terms of land area. It's, I think, the sixth largest country in the world in terms of area. However, it's, people are concentrated in certain areas, and then there's this vast open spaces in between. I don't want to go too much into the history of it. I mean, you can read up about that, but I just want to make the point that Australia, according to what I've read, is about six or seven times the size of South Africa. It's about six or seven times the size of South Africa. But the interesting thing is, it only has half the population of South Africa. You have about 24, 25 million people that reside in Australia. And in South Africa, we have, 50 to 55 million, depending on which stats you go. So it's a much bigger country, much, much bigger country in terms of land area. But in terms of the actual population, there are far fewer people that reside in Australia as compared to South Africa. Only about half of those who reside in South Africa. To give you an idea, I mean, in South Africa, what would be the longest flight from one end to the other? I mean, if you fly, for example, from Johannesburg to Cape Town, that would be about a flight of just under 2 hours, right? I'm not sure exactly what's the longest flight from one point to the other in South Africa, but I can tell you, in Australia, from Brisbane, if you fly from Brisbane to Perth, and I did that flight on Sunday, because I went to Perth first, and then from Perth to Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane, and then from Brisbane all the way back to Perth, because from Perth you get a direct flight to South Africa. The flight, the duration of the flight, listen to this, from Brisbane to Perth is just under 6 hours. It's just under 6 hours. If you get onto a plane here in South Africa and you fly for 6 hours, you'll almost be in Jeddah, right? What's the duration of the flight from here to Jeddah for those who go for Umrah and Hajj? Just a little over 6 hours. So that gives you an indication as to the vastness of Australia as a country. Another interesting thing about Australia is that whilst it's made up of 24, 25 million people, we know that the original inhabitants of the land are the Aborigines, and we'll talk more about them at a later stage. But about 46% of the Australian population is made up of foreigners. It's made up of people who are not born there, or at least they have not been living there for a significant period of time. They may be second generation or third generation or perhaps fourth generation. 46% are people who are not, so to speak, termed Aussies. Although they, anybody who's there now and who's got citizenship, in the broader scheme of things, or in terms of political correctness, they are called all. They say, you'll hear government officials saying, we are all Aussies. But 46%, that's almost half of the population. And that's why, in many ways, you would see that when it comes to Muslims and how they deal with Muslims in Australia as compared to how Muslims are dealt with in the UK and the US and other European countries, they have to be very careful, because it's far more of a multicultural society in Australia. In Australia, it's very, very multicultural, even amongst Muslims. When you address a congregation at the time of Jumu'ah, you would find in that one congregation, you would find Pakistanis, Indians, Bangladeshis, Sri Lankans, Albanians, Bosnians, Burmese, people from Somalia, from Eritrea, from South Africa, from the UK, from the US. It's not uncommon for you to be addressing people from 20 different nationalities in one masjid. And I'm just talking in Ahmad amongst Muslims, and obviously there's more to it amongst non-Muslims as well. So there's a big percentage of people who came to Australia at a much later stage. Another thing about Australia is that everything goes by the book. They are known to be sticklers for rules. They've got one of the most tough immigration policies when you come, in terms of what you're allowed to bring into the country, what you're not allowed to bring. The border control is very strict in Australia, and they know, they even joke about it amongst themselves that, you know, it's a very regulated environment. There are a lot of rules in Australia, and everything has to go by the book. Everything has to go by rules. But I can tell you, it's really nice to be in a country where things work, where the system actually works. And where people stick to the rules. And if you don't stick to the rules, you are dealt with very severely, but consistently. It's not that the rules apply to some people and the rules don't apply to others. It's not that there's discrimination in the application of the rules in the main. And I'll just explain the system of Australia being run, you know, by the book in terms of driving. They have a very strict system. You know, in terms of the speed limits, you cannot drive, the fastest you can drive on the freeways or the highways is 110 kilometers per hour. That's it. In South Africa, we still got 120. There, it's 110 kilometers per hour. And they have a very effective demerit system. So you would see that as soon as you come to Australia, everyone, even if they're driving 1 kilometer from the house to the masjid, they would wear the seatbelt. And they would ensure that everybody in the car wears the seatbelt. Because if they get caught, the driver will get demerits for everyone in the car who doesn't have a seatbelt. That's aside from the fine. And they can fine you individually as a passenger. It doesn't mean that you know the driver, you can't get a fine. If you as a passenger did not wear a seatbelt, you can get a fine. And I've heard of many people who said, you know, we came with a bad South African habit to Australia, and we just took a small drive from the house to the shop, which is like a kilometer away, and the driver and the two kids didn't have, or three kids didn't have seatbelts, and there was 3 demerits for each person that didn't have a seatbelt. And once you reach 12 demerits, your license is suspended for 3 months. And you can do whatever you want. You cannot overcome the system. They have unmarked cars, unmarked traffic officials who drive around. If they catch you, they automatically take you to task. So it's a lot about rules. It's a lot about regulation. But it works. The system works. And you can see that it's a very disciplined society. You can see it's a very regulated society because everybody abides by the rules. Everybody abides by the system. And the traffic officials themselves will abide by the rules, and they're consistent. So everybody is held to account, and as a result, the system works. And we were making jokes as South Africans there about how the Metro Police officers in South Africa themselves will fly past you at 160 kilometers per hour, and you'll see them, speaking on the cell phone and that kind of thing. So a very regulated environment, sometimes maybe a bit over-regulated, but it does give a sense of discipline. Also in Australia, what you need to understand is that most of the people fall in the middle class category. Unemployment is very low there, only 6%. The Aborigines are the ones that that suffer. But, they get a pension, and unfortunately their situation is very dire, but we'll talk more about that. But in the main cities, the unemployment is very low. And as a result, there isn't this need to create, jobs. Therefore, there are no domestics. You know, the women there have it very difficult, especially those who come from South Africa. There's no domestic to help you clean your home and to help you, you know, with your dishes and with your washing and that kind of thing. In Australia, if you want to hire people, there's a minimum rate, $25 per hour. That's 250 rands per hour. It's very expensive, even for middle-class people. So at home, you do everything yourself. When you go to the filling station, you fill petrol yourself. In the Perth airport, I even saw that after you print your boarding pass at the machine. Normally in South Africa, we would go to the counter, and on each counter there would be one person, meaning there's one person employed. There, the counters are also self-service. When you print your boarding pass, you must print your bag, the tag for your bag at the same time, and you put your tag onto the scale, and if it's within the weight limit, then it accepts it, and then you push it onto the conveyor belt and into the into the system as it goes towards the airplane yourself. Not in all airports, but at one airport, I did see that. So there isn't that need to create a lot of jobs, and as a result, there isn't it's unheard of there to have domestics, to have people for, attendants at the filling station, to have that many staff at airports, to get people to come and do your garden and to get people to come and wash your cars. It's unheard of because there isn't that much of a requirement for manual labor, because most people fall within the middle class category and unemployment is pretty low. And because they don't have domestics, it's very interestingly, when you go to dawats, when you go to meal invitations in Australia, they serve you in paper cups and paper plates. In South Africa, our women would rather die than serve guests in paper cups and paper plates. But there, they would serve the food in a buffet style, in styrofoam. So afterwards, it's easier to clean up. You know, you just put everything into a dustbin, plastic, and that's it. They got to take out their own dustbins. They got to put it at a particular position. So that is also something that's interesting from a South African perspective. Then, in terms of the layout in Australia, the way the roads are designed, the way that the landscape, just the general feel of it, is very similar to South Africa. The nature of the buildings, although the houses are built a lot these days, the newer houses are built with internal drywalling, and the kind of materials that they use to build these houses are much lighter. And not as bulky as the brick houses that we have in South Africa. And inside, you know, it's a kind of material that's used, very similar to drywalling. All the internal walls are made. The houses are quite expensive there. But the general layout of the country is very similar to South Africa. And I think that's why Australia appeals to many South Africans who want to move to another country. And also the climate, you know, the weather. In the different parts is very similar to different parts of South Africa. And it's a good country structurally. It's regarded as a first world country, and the economy is strong. You get about, it's almost 10 times to the rand. So one Australian dollar is about 9 rand 70 9 rand 80. That's what it'll cost you. So for the South African going there, things will be pretty expensive. I think I'll leave it at that point. These are just a few general observations and facts about Australia, just to give you an understanding of the country. Now, inshallah, in the next discussion, I'll talk about the various places that I visited, the Muslim communities, the Muslim organizations, the Muslim schools, the religious infrastructure, the scholars, the different experiences. We'll talk more about that, inshallah, on Monday morning, if Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala is well. 25 minutes to 8. Welcome back to Sabah al-Muslim and Radio Islam International. I commenced on Friday at around this time with a bit of a discussion on the report back on the trip to Australia. Just to recap very quickly, on Friday I gave a bit of background, some facts about the country, Australia. It's a massive country in terms of land size, 6 or 7 times bigger than South Africa, but it only has half of the population. We spoke about how almost half of those who reside in Australia are foreigners, are those who came recently, either first generation or second generation. We spoke about how it's a very regulated environment. Everything there is by the book, the rules. We spoke about how strict they are with traffic regulations and the demerit system and how you can lose your license. We spoke about the layout in Australia, the roads, the structure, the houses, very similar to South Africa, although in many of the homes now they use this kind of drywalling material to do the internal walls, and that's a bit different from South Africa. We spoke about how in Australia there isn't that much of poverty. You could say the bulk of the population fall within the middle class category. Unemployment is only at 6%. So there isn't that much of a need like South Africa, for example, where you have such a huge population. Australia has about 25 million people. South Africa has about 55 million people. High unemployment. So you're always looking to see where you can create jobs. As a result, in Australia, there isn't really this whole concept of domestic workers to help in the homes. There isn't this petrol attendance at filling stations and that kind of thing. And I gave the relevant examples then. And then we also spoke about, you know, Australia and the distances. You know, they can take you 6 hours to fly from Brisbane to Perth. It is indeed a massive country. And, you know, some of the terminologies there, yeah. In South Africa, we say yes. There they say yeah. The word mate, that is world-renowned. Everybody knows that. That's, you know, how they speak in Australia. Yeah, mate. Instead of saying no problem, here in South Africa we always say no problem. There they say no worries, mate. And someone was teasing me on Twitter on Friday that I picked up a bit of an Australian accent and come back. So I see Yunus Bamji from Marlboro say speak with Afrikaans accent and you'll allay everyone else's fears. But that's some of what we discussed last week, right? I want to take it up from there. Before I talk about the actual journey, there's one or two more points that I want to mention about Australia, and that is with regards crime. There's no crime in Australia. A bit of petty crime here and there. You know, it's amazing. You see people there, they have garages in their houses, and most of them, they're using the garages for storerooms. They're always parking their cars outside. They have an alarm system, but I don't think they really use it. They do lock the doors, but there's no such thing as burglar bars and trelly door and that kind of thing in Australia. You just don't see it. I mean, I was absolutely gobsmacked. I was driving with Mulana Imran Nabi, Imran Hussein, the former Imam of Nurul Islam Masjid, when I was in Gold Coast. And we passed by a stall. You know what we would call here in South Africa, a staliki. the vendors that stand on the side of the road. And we see them here in South Africa. They stand on the side of the road and they're selling fruit, especially in the fruit season, you know, when there's mangoes and watermelon and whatever else. And normally they would be standing there and you'd stop and you'd purchase and you'd pay. Here, it's an unmanned staliki. They got a box there, a money box with a slit on the top. The box is locked. You must go and take the fruit yourself and put the money in the box and be on your way. That's the level to which there's no crime. And I was laughing and I said to Mulana Imran, I said, you know, if this was in South Africa, they do have a camera there, right? They have a camera on that staliki. And somebody somewhere is probably observing who comes and pays. And I mean, there's so many ways you can cheat. You can buy something for $10 and only put $5 into the box. And I told him, you know, if this was in South Africa, they would have taken the fruit, the money, the stall and the camera, and they would have been on their way. But you know, it's so amazing. And Maulana then stopped and he took some fruit and he put money in the box just to show me how the system works. So it's really something that's impressive. No crime in Australia, and you feel very safe, and you can walk around. I mean, when I was in Brisbane at late at night, 11 o'clock at night, they take you for coffee and you're in the city center and you're sitting on a pavement in the city center. Yeah, forget Johannesburg city center. I'm in the CBD of Lanesia. By the time Isha comes, it's deserted because of security concerns. So that's a big plus factor for those who live in Australia. Also in Australia, everything works fortnightly or weekly. It's not like South Africa where you get paid once a month and you pay your bills once a month and you pay your rent once a month. There you get paid weekly or you get paid every second week and you got to pay your rent weekly or every second week. So that was also something that I found to be very interesting. And also one overarching point, you know, wherever we went in Australia in terms of the Muslim community, there was a lot of talab. There was a lot of hunger and thirst, enthusiasm to listen to talks of deen. In South Africa, we are spoilt. Whilst the Australians all the time, they look at South Africa as the benchmark from the Muslim community's perspective, from the perspective of religious infrastructure. But South Africans have become spoiled. You know, programs take place in the masjid and people don't want to sit. Big nights, okay, people will congregate, but then they'll complain. It was too long. It was too this. It was too that. We spoiled for choice and we spoiled in terms of the number of scholars and the number of programs and the number of institutions that we have. But when you go there and you give a talk, people actually take notes. They listen. They ask questions after the program. They prepare summaries of what you said and they circulate it to their friends. So there's a great thirst and there's a great enthusiasm. Now, in terms of the journey itself, the first place that I visited was Perth. And just to give you some idea, there's a direct flight from Johannesburg, from OR Tambo International Airport to Perth. Going time, it takes about 8.5 hours. But coming time, it takes about 11 hours. It's got to do with tailwind. And you know, coming time, when you're coming from Australia to South Africa, you're flying into the wind, so there's more resistance. It's a direct flight. You fly into Perth. Now, Perth is by comparison to Melbourne and Sydney and Brisbane, a bit smaller. They say that in South African terms, you can compare Perth to Port Elizabeth. A smaller city, much more relaxed, windy, like Port Elizabeth, but much more relaxed, much more easygoing. They had a mining boom for the last 10 years or so in the outlying areas of Perth, and that gave rise to quite a bit of development and the upgrades of the airport and that kind of thing in Perth. And it's, as I said, relatively smaller. But there are many South Africans, not only Muslims, even non-Muslims. You find many white South Africans, many black South Africans who reside in Perth. And there are many who stay there and then they work in the mines. They go and they work for 2-3 weeks in the mines and they come back and then they're off for 2 weeks or so. My host in Perth was Maulana Burhan Mehter. He's a South African alim. He graduated at Darul Uloom Zakaria and is there for about 15 years. And there are a number of South African ulama there, mashallah, who are doing sterling khidmah. Mua Burhan himself is involved in multiple projects. He's involved with the Muslim school there. He's involved with Al Imdad. He's involved with ANIC. That's the Australian Imams National Council, the equivalent in Australia of what we have in South Africa known as UKSA. He's very good at coordinating, mashallah. He's known very much in different parts of Australia. Together with him, there's Mohan Abdullah Hafiji there from Kostum. He's also teaching in the Muslim school. There's Mohan Shabir Adam from Lanesia. He teaches, the Imam of a newly built masjid there, Masjid Ibrahim. And they took me to the school on the very first day. And the school is known as the Australian Islamic Academy, AIC. And I want to talk about this because, you know, it makes you so proud as a South African when you come there and you see. And just to give you an idea, this school today has three campuses in Perth, three different campuses, and they have over 2,000 students. And the one campus, the main campus, I mean, where I visited, if you look at the facilities, if you look at the layout, it's absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing what they've achieved. And who started the school? It was a South African alim, Maulana Abbas Ali Zubair Ali Saab, Hafidahullah, from Springs. And his story also is very interesting. Many years ago, in the early 90s, he went for Taraweeh to Australia. And there's the old masjid in Perth, which is over 100 years old. I visited that masjid as well. Maulana performed Taraweeh there, and he was giving lectures there. They showed me the room, the very small room where Maulana stayed the entire month. And when he gave lectures there, he inspired certain people. And there was a gentleman by the name of Abdullah Magar. And he then got back to Maulana later on and said, okay, you know, you spoke to us about the importance of education and giving our children education in the right environment, and we want you now to come to Australia and to lead us and to help us set this up. And in the early 90s, I can remember Maulana Abbas Ali Saab making hijrat and emigrating, big sacrifice, taking his family and staying for 5 years in Australia, helping to set up this Muslim school. And then he came back. And then he went back again in the early 2000s for another 2 years or so. But the fruits of seeds that were planted by a South African alim, subhanAllah, today you go and you see a school there with 2,000 plus students. And not only that, I mean, there are many people who are linked to Hazrat Maulana in a spiritual perspective. Everywhere you go, you speak to the teachers of the school, you speak to the people in the different masajid, and they remember him very fondly, and it makes you so proud as a South African. And you say, subhanAllah, you know, now other South African ulama are going there, and they are serving. And this was started off by an alim that comes from our country. And really, this is something that we need to be thankful to Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala for. And from Perth, I was there for only one day. You know, when I just landed, I went to the school. I did a small talk for the Islamia teachers. That night, we had a program at the Thornley Masjid. That's where Maulana Abbas Saab was based for quite some time. And the next morning, I did a ladies program. And it's a two-hour flight from there then to Melbourne. And in Melbourne, I was hosted by Maulana Uzair Ali, and he is Maulana Abbas Ali's son. And he's also now in Australia doing sterling khidmah and work in Melbourne. But I'm looking at the clock, and my time is up. So I'll continue the discussion tomorrow, inshallah. I'll tell you about some of what we observed and some of what took place in Melbourne and some of the activities that are taking place there. And I'll also talk a little bit more about Perth towards the end, because at the end of the journey, I came back to Perth, and from there I came back to South Africa. So we'll take it step by step, inshallah. Tomorrow I'll talk a little bit about Melbourne and Sydney, which are the two biggest cities, and the kind of religious infrastructure that is there, and the personalities that we met, and the projects that we saw. And we'll take it from there, inshallah.
25 minutes to 7. Welcome back to Sabahun Muslim on Radio Islam International. We continue with a report back on the trip to Australia. Yesterday I spoke about the first part, and that was Perth and the trip from here to Perth and some of the activities there. Now, from Perth, I went to Melbourne. Melbourne is a much bigger city than Perth. It's one of the biggest cities in Australia. Sydney is the biggest. Melbourne is very much like Cape Town. Weather-wise and in many other ways. And in most of these big cities in Australia, they are split into two by a river. So I think you've got the Swan River, if I'm not mistaken, in Perth, and there's a river in Melbourne as well that splits Melbourne between the north and the south. The same goes with Sydney. The same goes with Brisbane. So Melbourne, pretty much like Cape Town, weather-wise also, you get, you know, four seasons in one day. It's hot and it's cold and it's raining, and then it stops raining. So, the fluctuating weather in Melbourne. I spent, I think, 4 days in Melbourne. I was hosted by Maulana Uzair Ali Saab, but he's the son of Maulana Abbas Ali from Springs. SubhanAllah, it's amazing to see the kind of sacrifice that these South African scholars are making there in Australia. You know, they leave behind their families, they leave behind the support structure. I was just telling them that, you know, we in South Africa, we're so spoiled because you have your whole family support structure here. You, as husband and wife, if you want to go out, for example, you can drop one kid by nanny and you can drop another kid by daddy. You know, you can use the uncle, the auntie. You got people, you got a big function at your home, And, you know, your mother will help, and your mother-in-law will help, and your sister-in-law will help, and this one and that one. And obviously they go there and they make new friends and that kind of thing, but you got to feel for it. There's no family support structure. Secondly, even from, you know, in terms of the ulama support structure, it's not like what you have in South Africa, where there's this vast number of scholars, that many institutions, fully fledged, developed. You get help, you've got people with whom you can consult, you've got people with whom you can throw around ideas. So they've made great sacrifice, subhanAllah, and may Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala reward them, going to these countries and trying to develop infrastructure there. Maulana has the Nurul Huda Academy, which is a maktab madrasa, and it's run very well using the South African curriculum. It's got premises, rented it out, mashallah, renting there, and very professional. Over 300 students attending that particular maktab. But the challenge there for the scholars is that the students come in different batches. Some of them attend the Muslim schools and then they come to maktab. Others attend the state schools. Some come twice a week but on different days. Others come thrice a week but on different days. Saturday morning maktab madrasa is something which is big there. It used to be in South Africa before, no longer. I think there are a few places here and there, Marlboro and maybe one or two other places where they still have maktab on Saturdays. But those who come for maktab on Saturdays, they only come on Saturdays. It's once a week and that's it. And also, because you don't have that support structure. So if you have a maktab in South Africa, it's not all that difficult to get trained teachers. There you don't have trained teachers. So you've got to get people in who have potential, who have a bit of a background, and you've got to start training them. So, you know, Maulana Uzair, for example, is going to teach the maktab Monday to Friday, then you go to teach the Saturday maktab, and then Sunday you go to have a kind of workshop for your teachers to prep them for the week ahead. So great sacrifice of family time. Also, whilst I was there, we did a Jummah program at the Isoma Masjid. What's interesting to note in Australia, and many of the masjids are not masjids alone. They kind of go with a community center type of approach. So this Isoma Masjid has a frail care center on its premises. They run the frail care center. One is obviously the social benefit. They get huge grants from government. And together with those grants, they are able to then, whatever funds they can save from the frail care center, because people pay to use the facility, that boosts, the income of the masjid. And then whilst I was in Melbourne, there was a center that was opened, PCGC or PGCC, Pillars of Guidance Community Center. Youngsters from Melbourne who had great enthusiasm that, you know what, we need a community center, we need to start something for the youth, we need to start something, for the different segments of society. And what they did is they bought out a factory in an industrial area. These were youngsters, young people in their 20s and 30s, using their free time to secure the funds, to raise the funds, to put the project together. And they got Mufti Ziyad, a South African scholar from Brisbane, to come and head the project for them. In Australia, and the official opening was taking place whilst I was there, so I had the good fortune of speaking at the official opening. They have a masjid. Next to the masjid there's a coffee shop which allows for the community to come in with a bit of a social intention, but then that brings them into the community. And then on the premises you have sporting facilities for youth. You have games and other activities that will keep the youth occupied. And as the project will be further developed, they'll have healthcare facilities, they'll have youth facilities, they'll have facilities for ladies programs and ladies workshops and that kind of thing. So you'll notice in many parts of Australia, this is a big thing. And I'll talk more about it when we get to Sydney, because in Sydney we saw a lot of that as well. We also went to the famous Hallam Masjid in Melbourne and did a program there in the evening. Again, I must reiterate what I said yesterday. You know, the enthusiasm of people to listen to the talks of Deen and how they engage with the speakers and how they appreciate, really, it's something which is heartwarming. You can understand the context. They are a bit more thirsty there. Also in Melbourne, I visited a Muslim or an Islamic museum, which is started off by a gentleman who's originally from South Africa. His family moved there some 20, 25 years ago. And this museum is amazing. Again, a factory that was bought over and turned into a museum. When you go into that museum, and this museum is frequented by many, many non-Muslims, by school children, by tourists, the first part of the museum, they do demonstrations on the different aspects of Islam. So what is Salah, what is Zakah, what is Hajj? They have a demonstration of what the Hajj rituals are all about. They have a ihram there. You are able to see what the ihram looks like and, you know, to touch it. Then the second part of they deal with some of the issues that you know are commonly raised when it comes to understanding Islam, the issue of hijab, the issue of interest. They have demonstrations, they have recordings there which people can watch in terms of explanations to these things. They have a particular room where you can listen to the Adhan and you get a feel of what the Adhan is and what the meaning of the Adhan is. The second part of this museum, they focus on the history of Muslims and Islam in Australia, how the Camelliers came in the early days and how they passed on some of those values to the Aborigines, how some of the Aborigines still have Muslim names. And then the third part of the museum focuses on Islam, on Muslims' contribution to humanity, you know, for over the ages. Ibn Sina, Ibn Firnas, and some beautiful demonstrations that they have there. And then they've got a restaurant at the end run by one of the Muslim ladies who was part of MasterChef Australia, which I know is pretty popular with our women folk here in South Africa. So that's a little bit about Melbourne. I got to meet many ulama, many community leaders there as well. There was an opportunity the one evening where the different ulama from Melbourne were called for a meal, and I was able to address them on the role of media and how media has had an impact, Muslim media has had an impact here in South Africa, the history of Radio Islam, and they were very appreciative in that regard. Then, after spending a few days in Melbourne, we went to Sydney. It's another 1 hour, 1.5 hour flight. Now Sydney is, you know, you can equate it or you can compare it to Johannesburg. It's the financial hub of Australia. Sydney is the biggest city. It's very fast-paced. Everything there happens very quickly. The actual capital is not Sydney, it's Canberra, which is somewhere in between Sydney and Melbourne, because when there was this tussle that should the capital be in Sydney or should the capital be in Melbourne, there was a kind of compromise. That's how it was explained to me. You know, it reminds me of what's happening here in South Africa currently, whether Parliament should be in Cape Town or Parliament should be brought to Pretoria. Now, when in Sydney, what was very amazing to witness first up was that there are certain areas in Sydney that look like total Muslim areas. You know, there's the famous Lekemba area, there's the Bankstown area and other, you know, nearby areas. When you go there, you'll think, in some of those areas, you'll think you're in Lebanon. You just see Muslims all over the show, all the restaurants are halal, you know, the signage in the restaurants are in Arabic. And in other areas, you'll think you're in Pakistan, you just see Pakistani Muslims. So that was really interesting to note how some of these areas have become predominantly Muslim. And they say that there's approximately 500,000 Muslims in Australia. 300,000 of them reside in Sydney. So there's a big concentration of Muslims in Sydney. I met Sheikh Shadi Suleiman. He's been to South Africa. He's been here to Radio Islam. He's a very famous scholar in Sydney, a young alim of Palestinian origin, but born and grew up in Australia, and he studied in Pakistan and he studied in Syria. And he's currently the head of ANIC, which is the Australian National Imams Council, and that's their equivalent of UKSA. And you know, he made me experience Thai food for the first time. We don't get to experience much of that in South Africa. And he took me to his centers, the UMA centers. Again, masjid, and then they have gymnasium facilities for the youngsters, sporting facilities, sporting courts. But together with that, a whole host of activities taking place, different projects, halakas, what they call, on different days of the week, different programs for different, segments of the community, youth, ladies, males, elderly. And he said, look, 70% of Australian Muslims are born in Australia. Their parents or their grandparents may have come from different countries. And I explained previously, it's a very multicultural in Australia. In one masjid, you can be giving a talk and you can be speaking to people whose origins are, you know, from 20 different countries. But he said that their focus now via these centers is to capture the 70% who are born in Australia. Many of them don't speak their mother tongues, even though their parents may be Lebanese or maybe Syrian or maybe Iraqi or maybe Pakistani or maybe Bangladeshi or whatever. They don't speak their mother tongues. They are now they identify as being Australians. In South Africa, we are already fifth and sixth generation. They are only second and third generation. But nonetheless, these centres are focused on servicing that particular need. Then the next, so I gave, Sheikh Shadi has a weekly Monday halaqa at the Lekemba Masjid, which is a very famous masjid, and he was kind enough to allow me to conduct the talk that night. The next day was an interesting experience. All the imams of Sydney were being invited for a breakfast by the AFP. The AFP is Australia's equivalent of the FBI. Now, there is some tension there, you know, between authorities and the Muslim communities with regards to this whole issue of terrorism and Muslim extremism and how it plays out in the media and all of that. And to try and build bridges, the AFP, you know, calls all the imams once a year. They have a breakfast. They discuss issues. So they took me along. It was very interesting engaging with different role players and ministers and getting their perspective. And they were very interested in wanting to know how things, you know, happen in South Africa. I had a chat with the head of the AFP. That's the commissioner of the AFP, and he was very interested in wanting to know about the system in South Africa, the hawks and how it works, and the SAPs and the different role play and all of that. And that night, we had a program at the Masjid of Sheikh Umar al-Banna. He's a very well-known scholar there of Egyptian origin. He comes regularly to South Africa. Every year he brings a Jamaat for 40 days. Sometimes he comes twice a year, and he says the reason he brings people to South Africa is he wants them to see the South African infrastructure. He says the South African infrastructure is an inspiration for them. And one of the challenges they mentioned that in Australia, many times, if the child wants to go down the religious route, if they want to, you know, pursue religious avenues, they don't get that support from the parents like you would get in South Africa. And they need to bring parents and they need to bring role players and leaders out to South Africa to look at the infrastructure. So it gives them ideas and it inspires them to try and do something similar in South Africa. Sheikh Umar al-Banna's masjid, Masjid Noor, is currently the biggest masjid in Sydney. And on top, he's developed a fully-fledged studio for social media productions. It's called One Path Productions. And they develop productions for YouTube and for other such channels. Recently, Mawla Suleiman Mulla Sahab was there also for a conference that was held in the Olympic Park. That's when Sydney held the Olympics. They had an Olympic Park. In that park, Sheikh Shadi under his UMA had a big conference for Muslims. And our own Mawla Suleiman Mulla Sahab was one of the speakers there. And the One Path production guys did some productions with the scholars who came to that particular conference. They've become very popular. There's a gentleman there by the name of Muhammad Hublus. He's very popular with the youth. He addresses many of the challenges. One of the big problems in Sydney is gang fighting, especially amongst the Lebanese Muslims. And he addresses this very aptly. And they feel that social media is something which is untapped. And it's really strong, especially amongst the youth. And they feel that in their travels to South Africa, they have noticed that we are very strong in traditional infrastructure, our masjids, our maktabs, our darulums, our Muslim schools, conventional media like Muslim radio stations. But when it comes to social media, and it would comes to avenues through which to capture youth and which to reach out to females, that is where perhaps South Africa is somewhat lagging behind when it comes to the rest of the world. Now, also in Sydney, I was hosted by a few gentlemen, and really, subhanAllah, they were really remarkable individuals. The one was Yunus Bhai Noorgat. He's from Stanga originally, the founder of NMC Pots. I told him my wife will be very happy to know that I met you because she has NMC Pots. The other was Brother Muhammad Mayat. He's originally from Benoni. And the two of them, you know, really took us around. Yunus Bhai made me experience the transport system in Sydney. It was remarkable, you know, because we don't get to really experience public transport here in South Africa. Maybe the Gautrain, but that's about it. Where they bought me a ticket. They said, right, we drop you off at a particular station. You climb on the train. You use the train. You see how this train system works, you know, like clockwork. And everybody uses, many people use the public transport system. And then I got off at a particular station. I met Yunus Bhai there. He took me on the ferry. We crossed over, saw a lot of Sydney. Then took the tram and got back to Lakemba where we needed to be. So, you know, you see how people are so professional, so courteous, how everything runs like clockwork. Very safe, very efficient in terms of the public transport system. He also took me to see what they say is the biggest graveyard, the biggest Qabristan in the Southern Hemisphere. It's in Sydney. It's like a town on its own. You need a map. There's different sections, obviously, for Muslims, non-Muslims, and also different denominations within the non-Muslims. A huge, huge Qabristan. There, the burial process is very expensive. I mean, it can cost you $6,000. In terms of the burial and the grave site. If you pass away on the weekend, it's even more expensive. And Yunus Bhai would say that, you know, where are they going to park you when you pass on? And Brother Mohammed Mayat ensured that he secured a meeting for me with the Mufti of Australia, who's based in Sydney. He runs a radio station in Arabic. And as my luck would have it, as soon as I came in there, he was about to go on air. a live program, and he pulled me into the program, and they were talking about Mi'raj, and they asked me a few questions as well. But a nice, humble man, you know, speaks mostly Arabic, but he's the Mufti of Australia. And then they also arranged for me to go visit the local radio station there, the Radio Voice. And when we went there, and when we told them about Radio Islam and the amount of staff we have and the kind of infrastructure that we have and the programs that we do, they were totally taken aback. Actually, they pulled me into the studio, they did an interview, and they made me make a commitment, you know, live on air, that Radio Islam will provide them with content because they would like to share that with their listeners. And obviously, we were most willing to do that because you know, whoever can benefit, wherever, that's something that's pleasing to us. So Sydney was a remarkable experience. I got to meet some of my colleagues also who studied with us in madrasa and who are originally from Australia and who reside in Sydney. Gave a talk at Masjid Bilal as well. There was a jamaat there from Pakistan and that particular night. So fast paced compared to the other parts of Australia, but nice to see the big numbers of Muslims in certain areas. And many of them spoke in Sydney. In Sydney, they spoke about the first Jamaat that came in the 70s, with Hafiz Kolya and Dr. Mangera and others, and how that Jamaat inspired the locals. And after the locals became inspired, they went out in the path of Allah. And when they came back, they started to establish masjids. They started to call South African ulama to come for Taraweeh, to come and establish infrastructure. Qadi Saleh Pak from Darulum Zakaria goes every year to one of those masajid. Or Musallah is there in Sydney, and he leads the Taraweeh Salah. So it's remarkable once again, and it was so pleasing to note the South African contribution towards the development of Islamic infrastructure in Australia. Then from there, the next stop was Brisbane. And I was really looking forward to Brisbane for two reasons. The one was the weather is much better in Brisbane, and Australia is also currently going through a winter period. And we also heard, we've always been told that in Brisbane there's a big concentration of South African Muslims. And as soon as I landed in Brisbane, I could sense it. Brisbane is like Durban. And that's why you would find many Durbanites or people from Natal or KZN living and residing in Brisbane. The weather there is like Durban. So as soon as you came there, you had to take off your big jackets and everything else. Much more pleasant weather, much warmer weather. And, you know, from Brisbane also, I had to go to the Gold Coast with Maulana Imran Hussein was there. I'm just looking at the clock, once again, run out of time. But what we'll do tomorrow, inshallah, we'll wrap it up. I'll talk a little bit about what we experienced in Brisbane and Gold Coast. And then just a few, you know, concluding thoughts and overall thoughts on the whole trip. And also, you know, the return leg to Perth, inshallah. So we'll take up that discussion tomorrow. Right now, though, it's 5 to 8. 24 minutes to 8. Welcome back to Sabahun Muslim on Radio Islam International. Over the last few days, I've been giving a bit of an insight into the trip to Australia recently. Now, yesterday we spoke about Melbourne and Sydney. Those are the two big cities. I mentioned that Melbourne is pretty much like Cape Town, and Sydney is like Johannesburg, the biggest city. From the 500,000 Muslims that they say reside in Australia, 300,000 of them reside in Sydney. And then just towards the tail end of the discussion yesterday, I spoke about Brisbane. Brisbane is very much like Durban, much warmer weather, a bit more humid. And in Brisbane, you would find a big concentration of South African Muslims, many of them from KZN. I was hosted there by Brother Yusuf Mir. He's originally from Dundee, here in South Africa. And it was interesting to know that he was one of the founding members of the Michael Group. A real pleasant man, very focused on his fitness, mashallah. He goes walking every morning, and he's a very fit person. And I landed there on a Thursday afternoon. And Thursday after Maghrib, there's the famous Karabi Masjid, which has very strong South African and African links in terms of being built. And unfortunately, it was in the headlines for all the wrong reasons. The Karabi Masjid, some years ago, an extremist burnt the masjid down with a petrol bomb, and then it was rebuilt. Now, at the Karabi Masjid, there's a maktab that's being run there, and I had the opportunity of addressing the students for a short while, and then the teachers, about the importance of understanding that maktab education is not only about finishing the curriculum and imparting the content of the syllabus, but it's about shaping the identity and instilling within the student the values that will help them to cope as Muslims in the modern world and make them ambassadors of Islam. Then the next day, Friday, Jumu'ah, I was given a bit of a tour of Brisbane. But before I forget, that Thursday night, Dr. Farooq Jassat, who's also from KZN or resides in Brisbane, together with Brother Yusuf Mir, took me on a tour of the city late at night. And that was really an enjoyable experience, because firstly, to be able to drive in the city late at night and not worry about being attacked. And secondly, there's like a man-made beach just ahead of that river that splits Brisbane. And they showed me how people picnic there late at nights, how they have these ready-to-start braai stands. You just go there with your meat and you flip the switch and you can start braaiing. And they took me for the churros. Now, that's very well-known there in Australia. It's all chocolate-based. And somehow they found out that I got a weakness when it comes to chocolate. So they took me late at night for the chocolate drink and the churros and the chocolate dip. And I still have the taste of that on my palate. Didn't do the recent dieting attempts any good, but it was most enjoyable. On Friday, there's a new masjid. They started by Sheikh Ikram Bakhsh. He's a graduate of Darulum Zakaria, or rather, he started his alim course at Darulum Zakaria, and he completed by Ma'a Taha Karan in Cape Town. He's originally from Fiji, and it's a big masjid, mashallah, and I got the opportunity to deliver the Jummah talk there, and I met many, many South Africans who are residing in Brisbane. After Jummah, we had an opportunity to meet various role players, Dr. Peer here from Indonesia, and many seniors, other ulama that are residing in Brisbane. Maulana Imran Nabi, or Maulana Imran Hussain, former Imam of Nurul Islam Masjid, he came to pick me up. Now, Gold Coast is about 70 kilometers away from Brisbane, and it was just so nice to see Maulana. We have fond memories of his melodious recitation at Nurul Islam Masjid when he was the Imam from the mid-80s to the mid-90s. And I went with Maulana to Gold Coast, and I must say, subhanAllah, what phenomenal effort Maulana has done there. He initially went to Perth when he went to Australia. He stayed there for about 8 years, and then from Perth he moved to the Gold Coast, and he's been serving there 11 years. Doing everything. You have to be an all-rounder. There's just one masjid in the Gold Coast. It's a very scenic, a very picturesque place. A lot of tourists there. It's good for fishing. It's good for swimming. It's good for, I saw firsthand there the snorkeling and the scuba diving. Maulana took me there to see how they do it, and how they jump in and all the oxygen tanks. It was very interesting to know that there in Australia, they have a separate beach to walk your dogs. Not like in South Africa. If you want to walk your dogs, you can't just walk the dog in between where everybody else is. You've got to go. Water very clean. You can actually see the fish in the water. And that evening I did a program at Maulana's Masjid. Maulana was kind enough. He asked me, he said, why don't you want to lead the Maghrib Salah? I said, Maulana, I've come all the way from South Africa to hear you read, to reminisce about the old days. Maulana has a different style of reciting there in Australia, but he recited in this very style that he used to recite in South Africa, just to bring back some of the old memories. There was a Jamaat at the time in the Masjid. Sheikh Talha was there, also a very prominent scholar, and I got to deliver a talk after Isha on the topic of youth, our greatest investment. And then Maulana took me to an island, which is, just near Gold Coast, where, a big number of Pakistani brothers were having a dawat. And we joined them for meals, and I also had an opportunity to talk to them a little bit about preparing for the month of Ramadan. And the next day, Maulana took me to see the different parts of Gold Coast. Really, he kept on telling me, you came out with too short time. Gold Coast is such a beautiful place. All the South African Jamaats have come. They've made a point of going there. One to visit Maulana, and the other is to just enjoy the scenery and just to enjoy the whole atmosphere there in the Gold Coast. All scholars who go there also spend some time with Maulana, and he and his family are doing a phenomenal job there, mashallah. He's looking after the imam, the hifzla, the maktab, all the social issues. Is the chaplain at a local hospital, very well respected and very well loved. And then I came back to Brisbane. That evening I had meals at a good friend's place, Maulana Riaz Sadat, who was previously the Imam of Masjid al-Falah here in Johannesburg, and also a teacher at JMS, the Johannesburg Muslim School. He's also doing phenomenal work there, mashallah, teaching at the Muslim school, and also running a maktab from his home. And that evening I delivered a talk at the Karabi Masjid, the famous masjid there in Brisbane. Then it was the long 6-hour flight from Brisbane back to Perth. And it was an interesting flight. The child behind me cried in the seat behind me for the full 6 hours. And I thought to myself, hey, you know, you need to come to South Africa. Our South African women folk will teach your mother how to dope you with the panado. So you get knocked out for most of that flight. But anyway, when I touched down in Perth, by that time the jet lag now and the tiredness was starting to set in, you know, almost 10 days on the road, different parts of Australia. But mashallah, it was so wonderful to see, again, our South African colleagues there, Maulana Burhan Mehter, Maulana Abdullah Hafiji, many of the murids of Maulana Abbas Ali Saab. There's one Bahreen, the brother's name there. He's a Hakim, mashallah, and he's also there to Maulana Abbas Ali Saab. There's brother Zahir Pando. They're also always entertaining the Jamaat. He's originally from Zambia, and the different scholars that come. And they again took me and they showed me around, took me to the museum, showed me a bit of Perth, because I was only there for one day when I came in. And that evening I had a talk on the importance of media, and I was able to talk extensively about Radio Islam and the Marabuka Masjid, where you would find many Malay Muslims originally from Cape Town. The next day I just did a bit of an assembly session with the students at the Australian Islamic College, which I spoke about earlier on. And then they took me to see the beach in Perth, very beautiful, mashallah, the different tourist hotspots, that old masjid, the original masjid over 100 years ago. And on that evening I had to proceed to the airport. One thing I must acknowledge, Maulana Burhan Mehter Saab, amazing his coordinating abilities, mashallah, and his rapport with scholars and with people throughout the length and breadth of Australia. Everything ran so smoothly. And he's constantly involved, mashallah, in bringing scholars and entertaining scholars, whether it's Mawlana Abdul Hamid Saab, whether it's Mawlana Mullah, whether it's Katani, Mawlana Katani, whoever it is, and arranging programs for them and coordinating with the different ulama in the different cities to make sure that everything runs off smoothly. One interesting thing I noticed in Australia when people were talking is about when they build masjids, they actually... there's a kind of very interesting way of raising funds for the masjid. You know, they have events, and that's fine. We have events in South Africa also. You sell tickets. But they get an auctioneer who comes in and says, right, I'm auctioning now the Imam's Musalla. How much, you know, and people will bid. And then the winning bidder will, okay, now you get the right to give the donation for the Imam's Musalla. And like that they go for the mihrab and for the mimbar and this and that. And this auctioneer, I forget his name now, but he's based in the Gold Coast. And they call him in to actually do it. Also, another thing that's interesting about Australia is that almost on a daily basis, they'll tell you people are reverting to Islam. In every masjid, on a very, very regular basis, people are reverting to Islam. There's so much more that we can say. They also have many social challenges. ICE, you know, it's a type of drug, I think similar to Turk. It's really a big problem amongst the youth. Gambling and alcohol addiction is becoming a big challenge there. So the social challenge is the same, like in most parts of the world. Bottom line, they look to South Africa as the benchmark. South African scholars are doing remarkable work. Sheikh Shadi, the head of ENIC, I mentioned, has said to me that some of the most active scholars on the Imam's Council are the South African scholars. They're doing remarkable work, making great sacrifice. So, you know, it's for us to be happy that, alhamdulillah, you know, people in various parts of the world look to us for guidance and look to us to send scholars. But there's a lot that we can learn from them as well. There are certain aspects, as I've spoken about early on, in which they are ahead of us from a religious perspective, from an Islamic perspective, in terms of engagement with the youth, in terms of certain facilities which deal more adequately with the kind of modern dynamics that we find ourselves in as a community. Obviously, everything is not the same between South Africa and Australia. It's much more multicultural, much more diverse there. As a country, yes, Australia has its positives. I said before, it's all, you know, the way the system runs and the rules and the lack of crime. On the other hand, South Africa has its positives, so, you know, it depends. I'm not advocating strongly for anybody to emigrate or not to emigrate, but I'm just sharing some observations, because in the end of the day, travel does make life a bit more interesting. It broadens your horizons. It allows for you to share your experiences and to learn from the experiences of others. You know, everywhere you would go, they would share, advise us, tell us, give us your opinion on this and that. And I would say, okay, that I can do all of that. But in the end of the day, I'm also here to learn from you, because whilst you may look at South Africa as your benchmark and where you take guidance from, but we also have a lot that we can learn from you. But in the end, to everybody who played a part, you know, in making this possible and in ensuring that everything runs smoothly, may Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala reward you. And I hope that my sharing of this experience with the listeners would be of benefit, inshallah.